Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to FaceBust, the radio show where we listen to your voice and talk about the corruption we all face every day in our courts. America's courts have been co-opted by organized crime organizations operating under the color of law to defraud their victims of life, property, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We, the people, must confront the perpetrators of these crimes to have any hope of creating transparency and accountability in our courts and repairing our legal system. We stand with you to create this accountability. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to face us. You are listening to Face Us Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Hidden Truth Revealed, and this is the Inside Scoop. Today is January 17th, 2024. My name is Robin Austin, and I'm with my co-host tonight, Luann Fleming.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show.
We also have our other co-host.
Okay, we have our other co-host, too. Hillary Hoag, welcome.
Yes, I'm still here. You didn't get rid of me, did you?
No. I was trying to figure out if we were going to have Marcy on tonight. I'm thinking she'll be coming on soon, but go ahead. How you doing, Hillary? How's it going?
It's going well. You know, not a dull moment. There's a piece from Adam Walzer on Ray Contreras and his mother Doris on their nightmare. But when you finish introducing the show, I'd just like to quickly, in my New York Eve, read an article that just came out concerning an attorney in Florida. So, again, welcome to the show, everyone. We're here to support you. We're here to listen. We are not lawyers, but we have gone through the ringer quite a few times, so we might be able to give you a little bit of advice. Whether you use it or not is up to you, but we are here to be your sounding board and your support. So thanks again. Another good show about to begin.
Yeah, it's going to be a really great show. We've got Robin back with us. He was off for a while. He's back with us now.
Here I am to say the day.
Back in the
Marty Hoag would be laughing right about now. Anyway, we're going to tell you a little bit about our story today. We've got Coswit and Scape on here. We also have, I hope that's how you pronounce your last name. I've been wanting to ask you that. But anyway, we'll be having you on, and I know you have your sister here, and I'm hopefully this is her phone number. But let me tell you a little bit about the show first. Let's see. It's going to be a good one, everybody. I mean, Cos and I were talking about maybe we should do some shows together, and we decided that our stories are strong enough, and we really want our voices to continue out there on the guardianship and conservative abuse that's happening in our country. Anyway, we're going to welcome tonight Cos Whitten Scap. I'm going to make sure that's how I pronounce her last name, and her sister, Dr. Mary Whitten. They were introduced to the abusive guardianship system when their uncle Harvey Whitten was preyed upon in 2011 in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, due to a stroke he never had a chance to recover. Harvey suffered from vascular dementia, the same as my mom, so I'm really taking this in heart, everybody. He was chemically restrained with Haldol without his family's knowledge. In 1 year under guardianship, $496,000, I'm going to make sure you come on and correct me if this is wrong, was spent for his care in 1 year. The Wynn family was shocked and mortified to discover how easily these vulnerable people can lose their human rights, property, and liberties within minutes in a hearing that disregards the rule of law and court procedures. Guess what? Cos Whitten now carries the torch for TS Radio, Marty Oakley, Blog Talk Radio shows. And she comes on, I think, on Friday nights, and she's going to come on and correct us if that's wrong. But she carries the torch for Marty Oakley, which is a great honor. And it all started with what this story she's going to talk about tonight. But this is what started it all for her. So we thought it would be a brilliant idea for her to come on and tell her story. And I think she has her sister on as well, which I'm going to go ahead. I think it's a 757 number. I'm going to bring them both in right now. Cos, welcome to the show.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for having me, Luann. This is such a great idea. Hey, Hillary.
Hey,
we're so excited that we're going to tell our story. Hey, who else? Is Marcy and Robin on?
I know Robin is here.
I certainly am. And, I'm not sure about Marcy yet.
And I do have a 757 put their hand up. I think it might be your sister.
That should be her. Yes.
Yes. I'm the 757 number.
Oh,
yep.
Good.
You
must be
all
married.
Right, you're on the air. Welcome.
Welcome both.
Thank you.
Oh,
my goodness,
for
letting me be on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah,
we're excited.
It's been a pleasure.
Last night, I was sitting there thinking that, oh, my gosh, I forgot that tomorrow's the show. So I got on there and said, God, you want to come on? I know it's short and all that, but as a radio show host, she gets it. She understands that anything can happen.
Oh, yeah.
Posting these shows 10 minutes before the show, 3 days before the show, whatever it takes to get these shows out, we do it, right?
Sometimes just a few hours before you find a guest, like, oh my gosh, who are we going to have? Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes they fall asleep, or sometimes they have had some strange things happen on our shows. I tell you what, I think the one of the most embarrassing ones is when Marcy Friedman came on our show for the first night, and I actually had to kick one of the other people off that came and called into the show. Oh my gosh,
oh,
it
was
so embarrassing.
The pornographers.
Anyway, we got a great show tonight, Hillary and Robin, and I'm sure Marcy will call in when she can. You know, sometimes she has a night off, and we welcome that for her because she works hard, and she's a great host as well. Anyway, we've got a cause with this and her sister. And
this is thrilling.
This is thrilling, yeah. So I wanted to start off, basically, I know that you had an uncle that was trapped in the guardianship system, and he was bugged and all kinds of things happened. And this was actually how you started this whole process with Marty Oakley. You told your first story, like, what was it, 5 or 6 years ago, 7 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is how it all started. I always think how much my life changed because one man had a stroke and because, you know, we decided to care. It has, I mean, and I know Mary will say the same thing. I believe it has absolutely changed my whole life. Wouldn't you agree, Mary? I mean, we wouldn't be the same people had this not happened. It was bad. There's so many bad things about it, but there's beautiful things too. And that's, you know, that's a burn on these evil people. The fact that they gave me beautiful friends and we wouldn't be having this conversation. We wouldn't know each other had these things not happened. And so what Mary and I did, and I would say because our story goes back to 2011, so we're looking at, oh, my gosh, the math, is that 13 years now? You want to always – we have a timeline. So Mary reminded me, and she said – because she's I'm the mouth and she's the brain. She's an actual rocket scientist that you have on here right now. But anyway, it's really important to make yourself a timeline. So because as time goes on, you're going to forget all these details. And so Mary is so super organized because, you know, she's a scientist. So she helped keep me organized. So we have a timeline so that we actually have all the dates and we're going to be able to remember everything. Because as time goes by, I know people think, oh, I'll never forget. But you will. And you'll forget the order of how things happen. So I would recommend everybody listening, make yourself a timeline. The timeline that Mary and I have is 10 pages long. So I think we might as well. Mary, did you want to quick start it off and just kind of give the basic story about what all happened?
Right. Yeah, and
sure.
You know what? Yeah, go ahead and do that. And then after a while, we're going to get back to Hillary because she has something to say during the show, and I totally forgot, but, you know, we love you. we really do. But we want
you know,
to...
This is more important. Yeah, there's
I know.
No problem. Yeah, nothing
okay.
urgent.
Okay.
And I'm so excited
well,
to
ahead.
Hear.
Okay.
That
perfect.
Happens.
Go ahead.
All
you
right.
might just turn that into the show, but go ahead, Mary.
All right. Mary, take it away.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for clarification, I'm not a rocket scientist. my job was the corrosion on the launch pad of the rockets, not the actual rocket. But you know,
it's
I used to work at NASA.
Deal,
he likes to say that. So what happened originally was that my uncle, he was 80 years old, and he was in really good shape, and he had a stroke. He had three different properties, and he had a stroke in his California property back in the summer of 2010, and he had two properties in Pennsylvania. And he was relocated to Pennsylvania, and he was cared for by his best friend, Robert Sproul, who was also elderly, and that was about a month later. So he was in California for about a month, and then they shipped him back to Pennsylvania to live with his best friend. And they couldn't find any viable power of attorney paperwork per his will from the 1990s that was found. And then his nephews, who are our cousins, they petitioned for guardianship in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, in January of 2011. Now, my uncle didn't have any family that actually lived in Pennsylvania, so the cousins were in Maryland, two of them, and then the other one was in Arizona. So they petitioned for guardianship, and Cosmos and I were oblivious that this was even going on, and we went and visited my Uncle Harvey in the January of 2011. So it was the summer of 2010, so it was about 6 months later we went to go see him. And by talking to him, you wouldn't even know that he had had a stroke. The only thing that he said was that he had lost his ability to read. But otherwise, it was like sitting in front of my Uncle Harvey and having conversations with him, other than the fact that he couldn't read, like you wouldn't even know. So after he got the petition for guardianship, of course, he didn't want to have a guardian. So he hired an attorney named Eric Cox for his counsel to respond to the petition saying, hey, you know, I don't want a guardian. And if he did have a guardian, he wanted it to be his best friend who he was living with out there. They had been friends for like 30 years. And Judge Ott, he ignores the Pennsylvania statutes, Title 20, Chapter 55, Subchapter C, Section 5511A, where it says, in appropriate cases, counsel shall be appointed to represent the alleged incapacitated person if any matter for which counsel has not been retained. Well, my uncle had already retained somebody. And so Judge Ott did not let my uncle choose his counsel, and he forced him to have Diane Zabowski to be his attorney. So already, you know, that's fishy. Todd, yeah. Do you want to pick up from there so I'm not talking so much?
Oh, my gosh. I'm always the one talking. All right. Diane Zabowski is basically public enemy number one, and that would be a whole nother show. But that is one awful, disgusting woman. And Judge Ott is, of course, he's called Judge Ott and his merry band of Ottholes. They're all working together, doing this kind of stuff. Okay, let's see where we got. Okay, so then Eric Cox then turns around and represents Bob. We call it Bob, Robert Sproul. And Bob was going to petition to be the guardian of Harvey if this was all going to be going on. And then on August 11th, so we're almost at a year since this stroke happened, Judge Ott appoints Univest Bank and attorney who worked for there, Juliana Von Dune King, to be the financial guardian. And he did say that Bob and myself could be co-guardians of the person. And then it was Juliana Von Dune King was a former court employee who worked closely with Judge Ott, and her new position in Univest Bank, one of her duties was to increase trust business in Montgomery County. That we have that all in court records to back that up. And Diane Zabowski starts billing, you know, $7,000 for a hearing. I mean, the feasting just starts going on. And things, I can still remember, like, Bob would tell me, like, these things. I just thought Bob was, like, a conspiracy theory. He would tell me, like, terrible things about this Diane Zabowski and this Univest Bank and stuff. And I just thought, well, you know, Bob, he's getting old, and he's, you know, telling me about all this crazy stuff. And you know, little did I know, Bob was right, because then we just kind of stepped right into it. Let's see, Mary, where am I? I'm like looking, it's 10 pages. I don't want to read the whole 10 pages. We want to skip ahead. Okay, I see a lot of charging, a lot of money. Money,
yeah.
money. And yes, that over 400,000, that estimate, that was correct in 1 year.
Forget that he couldn't use his own doctor to do his medical evaluation, and they had to court appoint one to do the evaluation.
Right.
If he passed it or not.
Yeah.
And of course, he charged him $500.
That's definitely in the pattern we see quite a bit in that playbook.
Yeah, they'll choose their own preferred medical providers to ensure that the outcome is what they want, which is for them to control all the money.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But she did say he needs a guardian, but he can still pick who he wants to give his money to in a will. And that ends up playing in down the road later on. But he needed this full guardianship, except this Malma said he could change his will. So then this was the shocker. So Harvey was the one with, not the best health. He had had that stroke, and Bob was amazing. And then Bob gets cancer, and I would never, ever have seen how this turned out, because we all thought that Bob would outlive Harvey. But Bob was an amazing man. I always say when I grow up, I want to be Bob. He only cared about other people. When Bob was passing away, there was an attorney, because we were co-guardian, this is one of the attorneys, because when you're in this, there's a million attorneys that seem to all be working, had said, Bob's going to kill me, but you need to know Bob is in hospice, and I had no idea. And so I bought a one-way ticket, and I flew out there, and Mary drove up, and we were, going to be there, and it was all that Bob cared about was how Harvey would be taken care of in the end. And Bob left all his money, several million dollars, and Harvey had his own bunch of million dollars. But he left all his money to Harvey, and no one ever contested that will, when that went into the pot. But all he cared about was, everything was to take care of Harvey. And there was a whole plan that was going to be happening. There was this other guardian that was some retired priest that was going to still come in, and it was going to be myself and this other retired priest. But then they go to court, and Judge Ott lies and says that the retired priest isn't doing it anymore, which we later found out was a lie. And he appointed Deb Clock. And I mean, Mayor, would you like to talk about Deb Clock? Because I might barf inside my mouth.
Well, before Deborah Clock was appointed as the co-guardian, because Kaz was still guardian at that point too, Bob had meticulously picked some home caregivers that would be with my uncle 24/7. And he had an asset test, because I guess when Bob would go to the grocery store with my Uncle Harvey would wander off. So he would take from Homestead, the aides, he would have them go to the grocery store with my Uncle Harvey and see if they would, catch him if he started trying to wander off. And so he very meticulously picked the best of the best that Homestead had to offer as far as the aides go. They were, many of them were in school, getting nursing degrees or, doctor degrees or whatever they were doing. So they were very ambitious people, and they were very smart, and Bob picked those ones out to be my uncle's aides, so that when he passed away that he would still have good care 24/7. So as soon as Deborah Clock becomes the co-guardian, she starts doing all this stuff behind Kazis' back. So I don't know, Kaz, if you want to talk about all the stuff she was doing behind your back.
I mean, Oh my gosh. Well, she would change all the doctors. She was trying to put him in like daycare and doing anything she could to get rid of the handpicked aides that were amazing. And to this day, Mary and I, we are very close friends with these aides. We always called it our, you know, Pennsylvania family. We've gone, like, when I think about Cindy Ramsey, like, we've gone and stayed at her house many times, years after, you know, all this has happened. These are very, we became very close with these aides. They were amazing, amazing human people, and they loved Bob and Harvey so much. And I mean, I can't say enough about how amazing these people, these aides were that were working with Bob and Harvey. Oh my gosh. I mean, they're like family to us, and they still are very, very special. And we all still stay in contact even to this day. But yeah, she just wanted to get rid of them all. She was changing the doctors. And then she was just weird. And she like fake racked him. Remember all this weird stuff started happening? And we can't prove it, but it seems to be a pattern with all the people that she has. And she did work on a psychiatric ward before becoming a guardian. And that seems to happen to all her wards. They have, like, psychiatric moments, and they get Baker Act, which they're put in basically in like, lockdown mental institutions because of some kind of freak out. Almost, Mayor, would you agree? Almost all her wards this happens to that we've met.
Yeah, it seems like it. Well, and what mm-hmm. made us concerned about it in the first place was Cosmos was on the internet, and she found a review online that said, "Beware mm-hmm. of Deborah Clock. She what was it like? She took $2 million from my grandmother, and her husband
yeah.
lost his law license because of it, or something like that." And Cosmos. Cosmos' son figured out how to call this person. So when we called them on the yeah. phone, that's when we found out that their grandmother also had very much of a declining health after only 6 months of being under Deborah Clock, and how she had changed all the doctors, changed all the medication. And this, then Cosmos was still co-guardian at that point, so she could get the medical records. So after talking to that, you know, those people, Cosmos was like, "Oh my gosh, I have to get the medical records." So she called around
yeah.
to all the hospitals to get the medical records, and when we got them, it was horrifying.
Oh. Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Now we need to also. This is we are speaking a truth. This family told us that they believe that their grandma was murdered. Yes, we were told that. And that was a huge red flag. And, you know, we never even thought, because you go into, you know, all this guardianship so naive. All it was going to take was a Google search. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have found it all, you know. But we, you know, it wasn't until, you know, at that point. So then I am good at internet stalking. That is something I excel at because of all this. I mean, I had people check my boyfriend out for me. Would you say, Mary, I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah,
found the
judge
ringtone, his eBay stores. So it is a skill that I used to spend like 40 hours a week. I had like retired at the time after my dad had died, which was before all this. I ended up just like not working, so I was retired for a while. And so I spent like 40 hours a week just internet stalking. And I was internet stalking and just finding all this stuff. And there wasn't as much out there in 2011 as there is now when people do Google searches. But I did find NASGA, the National Association of Stop Guardianship Abuse, and I started reading. I mean, you could spend a lifetime on that website reading all the victims. And that was what really opened my eyes. I was like, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. And there was that playbook. May I remember the playbook?
Yeah, it was a soapbox, I think.
Mm-hmm. It was someone, they had posted an article, and we knew that this was how it was going to go down. And so I still had guardianship. So we got all the medical records. And in the medical records, we found out that he was being given 5 milligrams of Halidol, not 0.5. You heard me correct, 5. We were planning to move him here to Wisconsin, and there was a social worker that I was working with, because we were going to try and just, you know, move him, because I still had guardianship. And there was no fighting families. My cousins and everything, they're like, let's get him out of there. This Deb Clock is bad news. And she wouldn't step down, and so we were getting ready. We were going to move them here, and we were going to have to go to court, blah, 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 because Judge Otthole, you know, had to approve it. But we had put the money down to move him into this really nice memory care, and there was a social worker that was working with me, and I had the medical records, and I showed them. And this is a Wisconsin social worker, Sid. If this was Wisconsin, there would be a criminal investigation going on, because 5 milligrams of Halidol goes against the 1987 Nursing Home Act signed by President Ronald Reagan. It's called a chemical restraint. And why these places do it is they don't want to pay payroll. They don't want to pay people to have to care for people. So instead of tying them down with ropes, they do it chemically. And so we now were finding all this stuff, like just breaking laws everywhere. We would definitely like to show disrespect to Senator Bob Casey of Pennsylvania, who aids and abets this behavior, because when you call, you know, for his constituents, he doesn't care. And he, I feel, Mary, in my opinion, Bob Casey helps cover this stuff up. We had gotten hold of my Senator Tammy Baldwin, who was on the Aging Committee here in Wisconsin, and she told me, figure out how to make it federal, because he's in Pennsylvania, I'm in Wisconsin, she can't do anything. And Bob Casey is still on that aging thing, and now he's the head of the Aging Committee, and we see that nothing gets done there, as we all got to witness, you know, over a year ago. So, yeah, that could be a whole show about that wicked man. But anyway, there was an FBI investigation that was opening up, and Bob Casey blocked it. We filed Medicare fraud. And that all was in the works while this sham court hearing had to happen, because they had to do an emergency hearing to remove me as the co-guardian. But they didn't know that we had grabbed all the medical records. Mary, did you want to tell some of the other juicy tidbits in the medical records, like Deb is his daughter and stuff like that? I mean, it's crazy what's in these medical records, about 3,000 pages of medical records.
Oh, yeah, it was awful. It was they had him on Haldol. They took him off vitamins. They took him off folic acid. I think they had him on some type of sedative, too, that he wasn't on before. I mean, the changes in the medication was ridiculous. It was definitely not for his benefit. And then after they said that, you know, the family, you know, we wanted Deborah Clock gone, and unanimously we wanted Deborah Clock gone. Oh, and in the meantime, Casas was sending very authoritative emails to Dan Freed, the nursing home administrator, Shenandoah.
Yeah.
And saying, you know, we don't want him on Haldol, sending, like, links to the articles that say how it's, you know, black box label. It says you're not supposed to give it to elderly people with dementia, you know, all the literature. So it wasn't like she was just complaining. She was backing it up with literature. And Dan Freed, instead of, you know, doing what would have been right, which would be to, like, change the medication, because it was the doctor there that was going along with it, instead, he conspired, in my opinion, with Deborah Clock and Diane Zabowski to get Cosmos removed as the co-guardian. So in in the complaint, and this is what's really bizarre, is that Juliana Van Doon King was the financial guardian from Univest Bank. And what would a bank have to do with the healthcare guardian? Like, why should the two mingle? But Univest Bank, via Juliana Van Doon King, petitions the court to have my sister removed as the co-guardian. I mean, how is that not, like, that should raise your eyebrows, just because why is the bank doing that? It's ridiculous.
Yes, thank you.
And
right.
What?
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, that's the kind of bizarre thing that you look at and you just have to recognize that, hey, something is wrong here. You know, it's like, wow, I suddenly smell rotten fish. I mean, there's something, you know, that there's some deception going on, there's something wrong-headed, there's something inaccurate in whatever's being portrayed when you have some disparate situation where what is somebody that's in banking doing interacting in this situation that ought to have nothing at all to do with them? You know, it's a clue that there's something going on with the money that you need to pay attention to, because otherwise what business would that banker have to interject themselves into this situation at all?
Exactly.
Well,
and this is what she had in her petition. She had this petition was in May 15, 2013, and she cited reasons such as Cosmas has a different opinion than Deborah Clock on her uncle's care, and Cosmas relies on information given to her by Uncle Harvey's aides instead of Deborah Clock. Like, that's a reason a bank is giving to get rid of a family member as a co-guardian. She also said that Cosmas wants second opinions from board-certified doctors on her uncle's medical protocol. Really? Why would a bank care if my sister wants to get a second opinion about our uncle's treatment when he's getting given 5 milligrams of Haldol all day and was removed from having vitamins given to him and folic acid? And then also another reason that she said was that the family wanted Clock removed from any involvement with our uncle. Like that, so that was part of Univest Bank's petition to remove my sister, was for those reasons.
When we already had another family tell us that their grandma was murdered by her. So wouldn't anyone want to get their loved one away from that situation? So, yeah. So anyway, the bank does it, and what's really interesting is that His money was in Vanguard. Vanguard is located right up there in that Philadelphia area. And I still remember I saw the stock spike, because remember, I'm really good at stalking on the Internet. And there was one day, and I wish I had paid better attention, because now I know why, but I didn't have the pieces put together back then, and I would have documented it better. But I know that any kind of law enforcement could go back and get this document. This is my theory on what happened. The day that the money was about $4 million was taken out of Vanguard and was reinvested in stock in Univest Bank in one day, $4 million. That spiked the stock. Now, if you're the court, you know what day that bank transition was going to happen. So you would have bought stock the day before, and then it's more money when you would have an infusion of $4 million. And why was the money taken out of Vanguard and invested in Univest stock? That was done, and that's super sketchy. And it spiked the stocks for that one day, and I can't prove that was the day that the stock was deposited in there, but I do know that money was deposited in Univest stocks. On that day, that if you sold your stock in Univest Bank on that day, you would have made some money. So, something to ponder. Go ahead, Mary. Yeah.
Good gosh.
Yeah.
A little
securities fraud on the side. Let's see.
Yeah.
Mary, are you? No. They just. I mean, here's another fun one. So, we ended up filing this Medicare fraud as we're going through all this, and we end up going to court. We went to court on, I believe it was July 5th, the day after the 4th of July. We're right outside of Philadelphia. Harvey's a veteran. And it was the biggest sham court, 8 hours. They put me on the stand pretty much the whole time. Judge Ott even made a comment at the end of the court that I shouldn't have, that basically I shouldn't have even been a parent and my son sitting right there. I definitely felt that had my child been a minor and had I lived in Montgomery County, that he would have weaponized Child Protective Services against me from the comments that he made directed at me. And I do believe that these judges have weaponized Child Protective Services to go after people that don't, that come on strong with them. But anyway, it was a big, big joke, it's called Star Chamber. So basically when we said all rise, Judge Ott already knew how he was going to rule. But there was 8 attorneys feasting on Harvey's account, on the Harvey's estate, when they were basically deciding to remove me for good as the guardian of my uncle and keep Deb Clock in, even though I did send you, Luann, that affidavit of truth. It's like a 50-some page document. And that is the same document that was sent to the judge that Mary wrote, because she's so amazing at doing all that, using all the medical records and showing why Deb Clock was a terrible, awful person. We do have a court stamp on that. So that was received by the court, and Judge Ott still decided to, rule in his Ott-hole's favor, in his buddies, and they had me removed. And they were furious that I had the court record or the medical records. They were furious. So
yeah, they,
I definitely.
They,
go ahead, Mary.
So in that hearing, at the point of the hearing, because we didn't, we were still a little, we knew there was guardianship abuse, but at that point we didn't know if Judge Ott was involved. So it wasn't like we were going in there knowing that we were going to lose. Like, knowing what we know now, we would have known that we're going in and they're just going to have their kangaroo court hearing and it wasn't going to go our way, even though there was evidence that Deborah Clock was orchestrating pretty much ruining the quality of life of our uncle. He didn't have dentures, glasses, or hearing aids. I mean, what kind of quality of life is that? And Diane Zabowski says, "Oh, Deborah Clock," when Deb Clock was on the witness stand, "Oh, you're more concerned with things that are more important than," and essentially, dentures, hearing aids, and glasses. Like, that should be, the most important thing to anybody, because that's your quality of life. You can't see, you can't eat, you can't hear.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Evil.
That's so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I want to bring up some of the things that were brought up in the court hearing that removed my sister. She was removed for reasons such as retrieving my uncle's medical records without first consulting Diane Zabowski, Deborah Clock, or Juliana Van Doon King. So what law is there that Cosmas should have to consult with these three people if she wants to get the medical records? So that was one reason that they had a problem with my sister in court. Another one was that she shared my uncle's medical records with me and the rest of the family. Who cares that she did that? It was not a violation of HIPAA. And then the third thing they've had, they had problems with other things, but another one that's worth noting is that she called a non-emergency number when an aide had notified her that they thought her uncle was dying from his over-medication on Haldol and the Shenandoah wasn't doing anything. So they had a problem with my sister doing that, too, that they were brought up in court. And they also employed Dan Freed, the nursing home administrator, to lie, in my opinion, to lie on the witness stand on their behalf. So that's what happened in the court. And that's and also when after that ruled, that's when we knew he was in on it.
Yeah, and then I got blamed for, like, they got, like, someone, like, turned them in to some kind of, and that wasn't even me, and I got blamed for it. I thought, I'm like, ooh, I'm getting credit for some other people's dirty deeds, but I'm not the one who turned them into whatever the agency was that they claimed I did. Remember that one, Mary? I'm like, that wasn't me. But, yeah, that was another reason, you know.
Yeah, people were turning them in all. Well, we did find out after the fact because we put in to have their, like, Zabowski's and Van Doon King's attorney's licenses revoked. And, of course, we got a letter back saying, oh, well, we talked to Judge Ott, and he said that there was nothing wrong with that court hearing. Well, of course he didn't think there was anything wrong with that court hearing. So the fox is ruling the hen house there. And after we got into, like, after this all happened and because of the internet, we also found the Boomers Against Guardianship Abuse. Was that Marcia's page again?
Oh, yeah, Marcia Southwick. Yeah. It had, like, 100,000 people on that Facebook page.
And through that Facebook page, we met other people who were victims of the Montgomery County Courthouse. And then we found out that other people had also sent in complaints about Diane Zabowski to the attorney's disciplinary board. And so we weren't the first one. Who knows how many complaints are against this woman, and she just continues to practice.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it seems like the same playbook, too. It's over and over. Even to this day, it's the same playbook over and over, you know.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Is that judge still on there, or has he retired, or whatever happened to him? Do you know?
I'm sorry, is who?
He retired early. And we like to think that we like to think it's from heat from us, but we don't know if that's true or not. But we like to credit ourselves.
Yeah. We had a few people like sent on the same day to every state legislature in Pennsylvania that we wanted to come before the state legislature and testify why Judge Ott should be impeached. And he retired the next day. I'm sure just a coincidence. But he retired three days early. And then he got a cushy job with the Mannion Pryor Law Firm, which is Deb Clack's personal attorney, Carl Pryor. And that's where he works now. And so that worked out nice for him. So the people who he was giving all the appointments to ended up hiring him to be a lawyer at their law firm. And he specializes in guardianship.
Boy.
I know. He specializes in guardianship mediation. But, you know, Mayor, we got to tell about Kathleen Kane because this is super interesting. So we lose this trial, you know, obviously. So the next day, wasn't it like a couple days later, Mary, after the trial that you got the phone call from the Attorney General office? It was just a couple days later, wasn't it?
It was, I think, a couple months later.
Thought it was soon. But anyway, Mary, you know, because we just all filed complaints everywhere. It was like we were playing good cop, bad cop. Mary filed the complaints while I just, you know, was like the sweet innocent one. And, you know, because what was that attorney said that I shouldn't be the one rocking the boat. So she did.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the Medicare fraud lands on the desk of Attorney General Kathleen Kane, the first female Attorney General for the state of Pennsylvania. Now, she is my political hero, and I don't have very many political heroes, but here's one. So she decides to start investigating, and I still remember Deb Clack used to have to send her weekly email update. And a bunch of people came to, like, visit him, and she was, like, fishing, like, well, who would that be? Who would know? We knew that it was the Attorney General's office sending a welfare check on him, but Deb was very concerned. Who was this that was coming to visit him? And we still have those emails. So the Attorney General was starting to look into this with everyone's complaints that were going in on basically what, in our opinion, racketeering. which is a felony, and that, you know, in our opinion, Judge Ott and the Ottholes are racketeering and doing all this guardianship stuff. And anyway, this attorney general was going after everybody. She was going after every good old boy you could find. She went after, they called it Porngate, because she, like, went through all the emails, and all these judges were sending pornography emails on their state emails, and she was releasing the names. And wasn't it two state Supreme Court justices had to step down because of all this? I mean, this woman was not corrupt. She went after everyone, and she started investigating Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. And there were so many of us that knew each other now. I mean, we just all knew each other, and we all would start, you know, complaining together. Oh, file your complaint here, file your complaint here. And so she's coming after them hard. But because this guardianship racket, like, it appears to be global, and it appears to be strong. If you Google Attorney General Kathleen Kane, you will see that she went to jail. You will see that Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, during the time that she started investigating racketeering guardianship in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, that Montgomery County, Pennsylvania brought her, the Attorney General of the state, up on corruption charges. And they somehow finagled that the hearing, or that the trial, would happen in Montgomery County with all those corrupt judges. And she went to jail. This woman went to jail because she was investigating and coming after all these people. You guys, Google this woman. Fact check me. Her name is Kathleen Kane, K-A-N-E, Attorney General of Pennsylvania. Mary, wouldn't you agree that that's what happened to her?
I think that's what happened to her, because it's very coincidental. I mean, she didn't care if you were a Republican or a Democrat. If you were corrupt, she was going after you. She's also the one who finally went after those pervert priests, too, the pervert Catholic priests.
Like 300 priests got arrested for all the filming porn in the churches. And everyone can Google it. Like, you can't make this stuff up, because people are so disgusting. And
it was awesome.
She was kicking butt and taking names. She was something. But that is how corrupt Montgomery County, Pennsylvania is. Mary and I can't even be in the state at the same time, because we have been advised that we would be assassinated because they hate us so much. So we don't even step foot in that state, because we shook it up pretty darn good. And there's been some stories of some mysterious deaths that have happened to some of the people that we know that still live in Pennsylvania, and it's very, very disturbing, very disturbing. But, all right, back to, it's dirty. We have, I think you had him on the show, Reverend Ralph. I mean, he's up there living in his car now, fighting it's the same county, Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. Let's see, Mayor, because I know we don't have a whole lot of time. What else do we want to get in on this? Because I don't think we'll be able to do our whole 10 pages here. We went through the trial. They isolate Harvey then in a hospice. Oh, the visit. Remember when they're like, Harvey's going to die. If you want to see him, today's your last day to come and see him. So we flew out. It was like Labor Day weekend. Remember this, Mary? And we see this, what was it like?
DNO or something?
NCO.
NCO,
Oh, my gosh. This is an eye-opening story. Tell that story.
So, first of all, Deborah Clock still couldn't be bothered to tell anywhere that Uncle Harvey would go that he was allergic to laundry detergent. And they had to use the hypoallergenic laundry detergent for his sheets and his clothes. So, of course, he's, like, all covered in sores all over himself, because they gave him, like, regular sheets that were washed in regular detergent. So that was horrifying to see. And then they had the do not resuscitate, and they said that he couldn't eat. But the aide that was there said that he could eat the last weekend, so they didn't understand why all of a sudden he couldn't eat. It's my opinion that they wanted to free up his room at the Shenandoah for somebody else. So they just decided to say, oh, you know, he can't eat anymore. He's got to go on hospice and move somewhere else. That's my opinion. So we go in there, and it has the do not resuscitate. And then we asked, you know, we asked the nurse, we're like, you know, what's going on? And he was eating his sheets. He was so hungry because they weren't feeding him because they said he couldn't swallow. He was eating the sheets. And so we asked the nurse, you know, what's going on? And they said that they would reevaluate him. And lo and behold, he could eat. So then they decided that they would put him on comfort food. So I think that means it doesn't have to be nutritionally balanced. Is that what that means, comfort food?
Yeah, who knows what slop it is.
Yeah, who knows what Apple who knows sauce. What that means? Comfort food?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my.
I mean, if it was me, that they're talking just straight donuts. But...
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Sorry.
Yeah,
very
straight donuts. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh, man.
No.
So,
that,
yeah. And then, but he was just too tough, and they couldn't kill him off. Mayor, how many months did he live after that? And they left him in a hospice. They told all his friends that he was dead, so that he was basically isolated in this hospice for, was it like September till April, because he died in April. So what is that, September, October, December, January, February, March? So he lived an extra 7 months, gave them all the middle finger. And my opinion is that Judge Ott was retiring on December 31st, and in my opinion, they needed him dead. They needed Harvey dead because we had had, at this point, we had had media attention with Michael Volpe's Rebel Pundit. We were guardianship. There was guardianship abuse spreads to Pennsylvania, Part 1, Part 2, and Part 3. Our story was Part 2. And then the Pocono Times picked up the story of him eating the sheets and that treatment, and so the heat was on them. I mean, we had put on the heat. I got threatened with libel lawsuit. I just said, F you, I'm going to say it. I'm going to keep my mouth running. And they want to bully you, and they want to shut you up. And I do these podcasts every week, and I think I'm nicer than I should be to these people on the podcast, you know, but they will bully you. They will threaten you. They did everything they could to try and shut us up because we had 3,000 pages of documents filed. I mean, we had Kathleen Kane was we went ballistic, wouldn't you say, Mary? We went pretty ballistic.
Yeah, we did everything we could, and we had the paperwork to back up everything that we were saying.
Yeah.
Paperwork, pictures, and videos.
Yep. We'd go,
I mean,
we would go in.
We were very, very, very well documented what happened to my uncle. And I would recommend anyone in this situation to document.
Exactly.
Yep. We'd go in there with our phones and taking pictures and recording. And, you know, they would bully you or whatever, and we just took it. And I think, you know, I'm shorter than Mary. I'm like the little shorty one, so everyone just thinks, I always say, let everyone think that I'm stupid, and then I'm going to come for you. But, you know, they would just think that they're just, oh, well, these two aren't a threat. Look at, you know, they're just these dumb girls or whatever. And we just went in there and got the pictures, got the everything that we could to back up everything. And, you know, but still the sad thing is there is no justice. And we got to tell his final story. So I was telling Luann this in the waiting room, but today is 7-year anniversary that Harvey was buried. He didn't even get buried for almost like a year after he died, which is another super disgusting thing. But he was buried in Arlington Cemetery 7 years ago today, and I did not realize that today was the 7-year anniversary until about an hour before the show started. So I just really feel it's just so meaning. And I'm going to cry, so I'm going to let Mary tell the story about Korean War veteran Harvey Whitten. And Mary, just tell the story so they know what kind of man he was and why it mattered to not die alone.
Yeah, he was a veteran of the Korean War. And while he was over there, he was a medical tech, and he had two soldiers die in his arms while he was at war, and he kept their information, so he knew where they lived and what, you know, who their family was, so that when he got back to the States, that he could contact the parents and let the parents know exactly how their son died and that he wasn't alone. And that's the type of guy he was.
Wow. Wow. You know, and I was just looking at all the stories that you had pinned on him. It's on your Facebook page, on Kaz's page of all the burial and all that. And it was exactly 7 years ago today.
Yeah.
So that, I do believe that.
Is that crazy?
He reached out to a fan. You go, girl. You know?
I do. You know? And that picture that's on the top of my Facebook that you shared, that's myself. We're sitting next to Harvey, and Bob is over us. And we always said that was like Bob, like being our little angel. It was like there was breadcrumbs. Like everyone had a different piece of information. Like you talk to an aide, and they're like, Bob told me blah, blah, blah. And then you talk to someone else, well, Bob said blah, blah, blah. And we would start to put the pieces of the puzzle together because Bob was on to all of them. But see, we would listen to Bob, but we didn't realize what Bob was trying to tell us. And Bob was right about everything. Bob knew what they were doing. And so when we would start to see little pieces of the puzzle come together, we always felt like in that picture that Bob was watching over. And I will never take that picture down until this has been resolved. And so that's when you go to my Facebook page, that picture, that's that top one with Bob and Harvey, I will never take that down until this is all resolved. And I put that picture up soon after the death. And it was just unbelievable. But, you know, we did get Harvey free. We were one of the few stories that got someone free. I mean, these people were being called serial killers. Yeah. So, Mary, Harvey was basically being isolated in a hospice. These stories are coming out, and people were sending letters calling them serial killers. I was getting copies of the letters that were being sent to all these people. And, I mean, everyone else, like people, like a bunch of us victims, we'd love to have our day in court and present our evidence so that we can, you know, be justified why we feel this. But, you know, we would love to have that day in court to bring this all up and to why we do believe that we can say this. But they were freaking out because of the media attention. And Harvey got to Maryland. So his oldest brother lived in Maryland. And we were able to get him to Maryland. And how many days did he live in Maryland? Not many. But...
Yeah,
he was a warrior to the end. He was not going to die. He wasn't going to give it to them. He was mentally tough. He was a Buddhist monk, actually. So, and he was really into meditation. He could still, in his 80s, put his, like, leg around his neck and everything. And so... Oh. When you practice all that, like, you know, he was an actual Buddhist monk. He used to go to India all the time, and he was mentally tough. And I believe he knew that he wasn't going to give them what they wanted. He wasn't going to die. And he was set free. It's very rare. The guardianship wasn't terminated, but Harvey was driven down to Maryland, and kudos to the nursing home in Maryland that accepted him so that he could be by his oldest brother. And he was surrounded by family, I think it was like 5 days, for the last 5 days of his life because of the immense pressure that we put on these people. And I mean, they're still living their best life and everything. And, but you know, it was something.
I'm also sure they also enjoyed having that last final bill that they could stick to Uncle Harvey with the court hearing and all the paperwork to have him come to Maryland. So they did get, you know, sure they're relishing and that they could dip into his money again for that process.
We got to tell about the autopsy thing. So we knew that he was, so we were demanding that we were going to get an autopsy, and they were fighting us that we could not get an autopsy, and they were going to cremate him right away. Now, I just told you he's a Buddhist monk. We had to have an attorney go under religious rites. So in Buddhism, they do not believe that your soul leaves your body until 8 days after death. So you can't cremate, you know, in their faith, like you can't cremate the body until at least 8 days. And they were going to try and so we had to go to court, basically. And we had this one law firm, and they went and, like, I mean, Diane Zabowski was fighting to cremate him and not let him have an autopsy. And when we did get a hold of, it's called a forensic pathologist, and they told us, and this is why Halidol is their drug of choice. And so everyone listening, your loved one is probably being chemically restrained on Halidol, because this is what the forensic pathologist told us, is that if you would do an autopsy and you would look for this Halidol abuse, you would not find it. What you would find and what Halidol does is it just makes your organs look old, so that in an autopsy, it will look like you died of old age. But the proof is when they're still alive, and we have those videos. So we do have the proof. Mary, tell the proof, the videos.
Like the twitching of the muscles and like a zombie face, like a stone face, like that is a signs of being chemically restrained on Halidol. And we do have videos of his stone face and the twitching muscles in his arms. So we do have that.
Yeah, And that was what he said was basically the proof of the chemical restraint. So then we ended up, you know, not doing the autopsy, but we do have what we need to prove our allegations, plus we do have the medical records to prove our allegations. And, you know, the story is not over yet. We're still, you know, we haven't seen justice. I mean, then they contested the will, and that went on for, I mean, oh, my gosh. I mean, it's never ending. It's like the end of the playbook. And but it's just, it's not over yet. It's just not over. The fact that we're still spending our time doing podcasts and talking about it, and we still meet people, and there's so many victims in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. I just heard from Reverend Ralph that there are now, Mayor, I don't even think I told you this. So right now they have three judges in that do guardianship. They just elected two more. There's going to be five judges doing probate. When Harvey was in it, there was just two. So this definitely, they've got a growing business going on there. And they just keep on getting away. But I do believe someday they'll pay for it. I believe they'll get caught. There's some in, you know, you always get little nibbles here and there, investigations here and there, but yeah, their day will come. We all know each other, and none of us are related, and it's very obvious what's happened, but we're playing the long game, Luann and everyone. We're playing the long game, and we're not done fighting this. And I have to wonder if they would ever go look back and go, you know what, maybe we should have let that one go, because I hope that someday they do. And many of us, like Austin Gibson, she's always like, get your impact statement ready. Hers is all ready. Austin Gibson, she will tell you that her mother was murdered. She's been a guest many times on Marty's show. Her mother hasn't had a proper burial, and she has not placed the headstone on her mother's grave. And all of us will be at that funeral when we have justice, and we will bury Austin Gibson's mother. Mm-hmm. And until then, the headstone hasn't been placed, because Austin is sure that justice will come. It will come. I don't know, Mary,
right.
Do you have anything else to add? I feel, you know,
right.
It's a lot of story to get done in just a quick hour. I hope you did it good.
No, you
yeah.
did fine.
Yeah, I think we covered the highlights.
Yeah.
So if you look at, if you think in stories today, do you still get a lot of people calling in about Montgomery County?
Number one, yes. That's from what I had heard from NASGA, that the Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, is the most documented corrupt county in the United States. There's more victims out of Montgomery County than any other county in the country. So yeah, I mean there's people that I'm not Facebook friends with them, because we don't want the evil people to know that we all know each other. So it's very, I mean, people are afraid for their lives. There has been some mysterious deaths that have happened up there. It's a very serious, situation. So there's a lot of people that you don't know who they are. They will never come on the show. I will never say their names. Oddholes do not know that we know each other. It's people are scared, but there's a whole Facebook page, Shenanigans in the Montgomery County Facebook page. That's a great place to go and meet people. Just go in the comments. Just go, you know. I mean, it's been, Mary, you know about that Facebook page. You talk to Mr. Shenanigans more than me. Give us an update. And Shenanigans is one of the sponsors of Marty's show. For many, many years, Mr. Shenanigans sponsored Marty.
Yeah, so... Yeah, that Facebook page does seem to bring a lot of the victims together, because they'll make a comment underneath a post, and someone else underneath the post will be like, I had that guardian too. And so you can see how they can meet each other on there. And also on that Facebook page, the courthouse has the corruption and guardianship abuse. But also on that Facebook page, people will comment about corruption in divorce court too, and child custody cases. So they're not just limited to guardianship. It seems like that courthouse is corrupt all way round in any type of cases, I think, that they administer, it seems.
Yeah.
And Elaine, Shenanigans in Montgomery County, PA courthouse. Yeah, I see that.
Yep. And Elaine Mickman out of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, she was divorced and guardianship. They tried to guardianize her in the divorce. She made it into Diane Diamond's book. So she was the representative, and I guess Elaine said another woman in the divorce guardian thing. And I remember Diane saying that was unique to Montgomery County, that you are guardianizing women who are divorcing wealthy men. And she did write about that in her book. So, and I remember Diane saying that was a unique thing, that special to Montgomery County, extra corrupt. So, yeah.
Well, there's a point of distinction that they can all be proud of.
Yeah.
Their crimes are worse than most of the nation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And we spent with Netflix, Mary, how many hours did we put in for Netflix? So Montgomery County, there was it was called what was that TV show, Mary? Dirty Money.
Dirty Money.
There was this show. Yeah, and so they were going to do a whole episode, The Oddholes of Montgomery County, but they needed a live victim, and at the time all the victims were dead, and so we couldn't produce a live victim. So they ended up doing, I think her name is Lisa Ballinger. They, out of, like, Massachusetts, Dirty Money ended up doing this show on her. But they almost did the whole show on Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. We had an attorney at the time. We had this attorney stand. We had an attorney that would, like, do our phone calls with us when we would talk to Netflix. And Mary and I spent, I would say, wouldn't you say, Mary, like 50 hours on the phone just going through court documents and mailing them over to Netflix? And we had it all organized for them. Some guy named Sabine.
To organize all that stuff. Finding all the different court cases.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So, they almost ran it. And we did film a documentary. I don't know, was that going to be Netflix or HBO that they did it on? And then they never aired it. They were going to air it in January after Trump's inauguration because that was like sweeps week or something. And they said they just had to wait for slow news and for everything to calm down about Donald Trump. And it never calmed down, and they never aired the documentary, but it's out there. And one of the people in the documentary is that they filmed is a man named Elko, and Shenanigans in Montgomery County has that. It's like a YouTube with the court documents, but this is so disgusting. This is a Holocaust survivor that got guardianized by Deb Clock and Diane Zabowski, and the documentary crew went in and interviewed him. They got into the nursing home and interviewed him and got him on tape. And they said he had like the tattoo on his arm and everything. But there, it's a very, very sad story what happened to Elko. And isn't that on Shenanigans, Mary? It's like Elko
it's on Shenanigans, it's like, and it's also on the YouTube channel. And the YouTube channel name is Kangaroo Court. And he said in his interview, we heard from the guy who also taped us, he said that Elko said, and Elko knows what a Nazi is because he was in Nazi Germany as a child. And he said that Diane Zabowski and Deb Clock and that whole crew, he called them Nazis. And he knows what a Nazi is. So that's saying something when people call them Nazis.
Yeah. And there's, like, a letter that he wrote, like, the letter that he got out to someone that we know. I mean, everyone knows everyone up there in Pennsylvania. And, like, Mary and I don't live there. And, I mean, I know some people have moved out of the state. Many people have moved out of the state. But there's a lot. They will not step foot in the state of Pennsylvania. And there's a lot of people that we know that we're not Facebook friends with. We don't want, we know that we're being spied on. We know, I mean, we're very, very, very careful with the information that we have about who knows who. But there's probably, I mean, Mary, how many documents do you think, like 200 or something?
I mean, you just have to go look at the Montgomery County court record site and you can just see how many.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's crazy, and it's been going on. I mean, probably, didn't we hear, it's probably been over 20 years they've been doing the scam. Isn't that when someone was going into 30? Because we know someone.
Yeah, I had contact with that lady, the one where back in the 90s, he had to pay $50,000 for a bed. Remember that person?
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember their name, but yeah. Because they commented underneath the Rebel Pundit article. They found that Rebel Pundit article, and they made a comment. And they gave their court number in that article, in the comments.
Oh,
and it was long ago, like 1996 or something.
And that's how, we've met a lot of people. Like, when these articles came out, you always want to go in the comment section and look and see, because you might see someone comment about, like, the same judge or the same, you know, whatever, and then that's how you meet people. And so the fact that we had the Rebel Pundit and the Pocono Times, and then there was in Montgomery County the Reading Eagle and did a big article. Like, wasn't it a three-part series on Montgomery County guardianship? And there was a lot of people, we weren't in that article, but other people were. And then there was recently a guardian who was found, Gloria Byers. Mary, tell about Gloria Byers. This is Montgomery County, and she was just pled guilty, like just a couple weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, she was in jail in Virginia for writing bad checks. And so what does she do when she gets out of jail? She moves up to Pennsylvania to become a guardian. And then I guess she still had family down in Virginia, and she was using them, some family members or something, as like the quote-unquote like business that she would use for them to provide services up to all her wards up there in Pennsylvania, and they were stealing and pilfering from the accounts, and she was getting all the money. And then I think it was it Nicolette? Was that her name? Bramble? Nicolette Brambilla?
Nicole
Brambilla. Yeah, she did a fantastic article and investigation on her. And she busted her and made an article about her. And you know how these all work. Same with April Parks. Nothing happens to these guardians until it makes the paper or it makes the news. And then the light is shined on them. And if they don't do anything about it, then it doesn't look good. So since Nicole shined the light on Gloria Byers in her news article, she got arrested and she ended up going to jail.
Yeah, you know, and then she did a plea deal. So, you know, to know, because something's stirring up there. And I want to make one thing. Would she have like 1,200 wards or something, this Gloria Byers? Was it something like that?
And I don't remember that it was that many, but it was a lot. And a lot of them weren't incapacitated. I think some of them weren't even incapacitated. They just were handed a guardian.
And then she was accused, and this is the wording that was in the, like, I don't know if it was in the court document or what, but it was wording that Gloria Byers neglected her ward so much that it hastened their death. No, that is not how we should be wording it. No, she murdered them. If you neglect someone so much that it hastened their death, that's let's call it what it is. That's murder.
That's
murder, like, in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, and she pled guilty.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we need to hear what Hillary was going to share quick, because I know you don't have a lot of time left.
Well, maybe she'll call back into the show. She had to leave, but we'll definitely, I'll find out and text her real quick. It's interesting because you've actually turned into, you took over the torch for Marty Oakley as well. So how do you feel about doing all that? I mean, feel about all that. I know that's really important to you, you know?
Oh, my gosh. I love to tell that story. So, I can't remember who first told us about Marty Oakley. I kind of think it was Elaine at NASCA. And so I was really nervous, and so I contacted Marty and asked if we could come on the show. And I sent you a copy of that show. I need to play it. And like 3 or 4 families went on the show, and we all told the same stories about Montgomery County. And then we did a follow-up, and then we're having some technical difficulties.
Yeah, hold on a second. See if I can one of these. Okay, so that was on Mary's line, maybe. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Yeah, something's going on with Mary's
line.
Mary,
if you can mute yourself when you're not talking.
We're muting Mary. I just switched phones. That's what's happening. You know what? I'm just going to hang up because my portable is dying battery. So thank you for having me on the show. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Mary. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. So then we were on the show twice, and I was really, you know, finding more people in Montgomery County that I was knowing, and I'm like, I hate these people, these otholes and guardians, not the people that I found. And I'm like, we got to keep exposing this. I'm playing the long game. And so I was really nervous. I remember saying to Elaine at NASCA, do you think if I asked Marty if she would, like, if we could do a show every week called, you know, The Otholes, going after the otholes. And she's like, you should ask her. And so I was really nervous because Marty was, like, on a high pedestal for me, like, oh, my gosh. Like, oh, you know, I'd get so excited if I'd get an email back from her or anything because I was in awe of her. And so I sent her the email and asked her, and she said, sure, let's do this. And so so we started it, and we did it on Friday nights. And at first the show was good, and she'd already done a lot of guardianship stuff, but, you know, she didn't have, like, a dedicated night that she was always doing it. But Friday nights, it was myself and Marty, and we were going to first just have all these different victims coming on from Montgomery County, And it really, I mean, it blew up. She already had the Australians before we were doing this. So she already was international with all this guardianship stuff. But she didn't have, like, the specific day that she always did it. And then we just started, it just really blew up with people all around the country and the international just every Friday night. But, you know, every Friday night for 4 years, I spent, actually, she passed away. Our four-year anniversary was in April of doing the show, and Marty passed away on April 1st. So we just made the four-year anniversary pretty much every Friday. I hung out with Marty Oakley, and we would, at the end of the show, we would call each other up, or we, you know, we're talking about it, and we just really became closer and closer and closer. And at first it was, you know, we're going to do this show together. And then that relationship just really built, and it got to the point where probably the last 2 years before Marty passed away, we were texting each other or calling each other on the phone every day, almost every day. And it wasn't just always about the show and guardianship. You know, I'm also, when I'm not fighting evil aunt holes, I am a pastry chef and I do wedding cakes and stuff. And Marty was an artist, so I would send her pictures of my cakes. You know, do you think I need another flower over here? Or, you know, because Marty was a painter. She was a great artist. I got to hear all about her family. She knew about mine. And she was so wise. And I'm so blessed that I got to have this beautiful relationship with her. I absolutely considered her to be one of my best friends, because you don't just text and talk on the phone to just anybody almost every day. And that's like, you know, your BFF. But what's really crazy is I only met her in person one time, and that was down before COVID. It was the July before the whole COVID thing. She was a speaker at the Whistleblower Summit, and I flew down to see it and to see her panel. And Mary lives right by there, so I just flew in and visit my sister, and we drove up, and it was pretty spectacular. And now I'm so blessed to have Marcel Reed as a friend, because Marty set me up. I was totally blindsided when she passed away, but everyone – I had so many of Marty's friends coming out of the woodwork. You know, Marty told me whenever this was going to happen, like, that we're here to support you and that you've got to, you know, keep carrying this torch. And, I mean, the support, like, Marcia Joyner is so amazing. She's still doing her show on Wednesday. Marcel Reed is just, I'm in awe of that woman. Oh, my gosh, she is. She has a wiki page, and Marcel is a whistleblower, and she's so smart and she's so sweet and she just has this wisdom about her. And that was like the friend, like, I inherited Marty's friends, you know. I inherited a show, but I inherited Marty's friends. And Marty's friends, Marty had loyal friends. If you were Marty's friend, people were loyal to Marty, as you are. You're loyal to Marty, and like writing about her in the book and have, you know, talking about her, and you know, people loved her. Mm-hmm. And Debbie Dahmer, my mama bear, who is also on Blog Talk, she's like, you know, if you need any help with anything. And Marty had me trained in, so I was like knowing the back of the house and everything. So I had done that about a year before Marty passed away, because we had had a scare, and everyone was worried about her. And so then I had to, like, have my talk. I remember saying, Marty, what if something had happened? I hate having this conversation with you because I don't want anything to happen. And she's like, I'll be fine. I'm like, yeah, but I made her give me the passwords and stuff and show me how to do it. And I'm so glad that she did, and everyone is so glad, because we would have lost all that archive. And then her shows got picked up, what do they call it, like a syndicate? So it's not Marty mm-hmm. making the money. It was never Marty mm-hmm. making the money. So they must grab the RSS feed and throw it up on Spotify and all these other places. And then there's ads that show up. And usually when people do podcasts and they have ads, the person doing the podcast makes the money off the ad, but Marty wasn't. And I remember her being really upset about it. And then even after Marty passed away, Marcel was realizing, like, people are making money off off these podcasts because they're, you know, they're just grabbing them and throwing them up there. And we decided, you know what, they can make all the money because we're getting the message out. So that's, I mean, it's crazy. So we can't even see all the back of the house stuff for what's, how much it's getting shared and how many listeners. And so really, if anyone's listening on one of these other, you know, platforms on the show, you really want to get a hold of us, you know, try and find us on Facebook, or you can leave a message at Blog Talk, because otherwise we might not see your message because we're, you know, someone else is syndicating everything out there. So, but we appreciate it, and we're excited. Marty was excited when, you know, that it all got picked up, and it's still out there, and it's still happening, and the word's getting out there, and it is a huge honor to be following in Marty's footsteps. You know, I can remember someone was telling me the story about a bridge. Like, there was, why is someone building that bridge? Because you're never going to go back over it again once you get across it because you're too old. And the person said, I'm building the bridge for the person who's coming behind me. And Marty built me the bridge. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And she did the same for me as well. I mean, there was so many times I turned to her, and I think I co-hosted before you came on for quite a long time with Marty as well. And then we were both own shows as well, and we were never in competition. We just wanted the word out, and she was one of my biggest mentors of all time. And I tell you what, she was a character. I would laugh sometimes for her so hard, and we just shared just so much. And I took it really hard when she passed. I didn't even know how to act. You know, I was devastated. You know.
Oh,
but she said,
God,
we have to carry on, and I agree. You know, I remember a couple of times I had issues with my show going on. She says, you better keep it on. We're the only two left, you know. And so
I think we're the only
her.
Two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We both have a lot in common there, our shows and your shows. Marty shows, we all have a lot in common. We just want the word to get out. We want this guardianship and conservatorship abuse to stop. Robin and I are writing a book. We've got a lot of it done, and we mentioned you in there and Marty in there and a lot of the advocates in there, mostly all co-show hosts on here, and then they can go to our sites and listen to all these shows that we have. And that's how we're putting not really personal stories in there, but just as we are as co-hosts with all the issues that we've learned about guardianship abuse, and I tell my story in there. It's really a good book so far, so we're going to be trying to get that out in the next couple months, and it's going to be really good, and it's hard. It's difficult to talk about. It's difficult to talk about all the time, and you'd really have to give yourself a break as well. I hope you get a break as well doing this. Anyway,
I go make a wedding cake.
So if anybody wants to get a hold of you, how can they do that? If they want to... How does that happen?
The email address is causeandmarty@gmail.com, causeandmarty@gmail.com. And otherwise, on Facebook, Cause Witten Scave, it is like it's now like a public profile, so you can just follow me and you can send me a message on Messenger also. Those are probably the best ways to get a hold of me. And I'd love to hear from everyone.
That's perfect. And I just want to thank you and you're so much for coming on. I've been wanting to hear your story for a long time. And I know that one time you came on and you won a book. I remember that.
I did. I won the CD from, what was his name? Danny Tate.
Yeah, you won the CD.
Yes.
That was a long time ago.
I won the CD. Yes.
Anyway, thank you for coming on. We'll be here again next year. If you have listening to The Inside Scoop on Faces Radio, Hidden Truth Revealed on Blog Talk Radio, remember all of our shows are recorded. They're archived. There's quite a few on them to listen to.
Just go to blogtalkradio.com/Hidden Truth Revealed.
Right, with Robin Austin, Lauren Fleming, Marcy Freeman, Hillary Holger, some of our co-hosts. Thank you so much for coming
it's
on.
It's a privilege
and
an honor to have you all on. Thank you so
much. Oh, my gosh. Right. Thank you so much. This was so much fun. We'll have to do it again. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to do it again. We'll be doing some shows together as well.
Absolutely.
Especially when we get the Roger Hillegas case going on and Stuart Hunt.
Oh.
We're going to have to do one on that as well.
Oh, my gosh. That could, make national news. That is, he's in jail because he wanted to be with his mom. That's so insane.
We should be on that pretty soon. You know.
Awesome.
Okay.
I'll be listening.
Well, I guess we'll
awesome.
Go ahead and say goodbye. We're going to play The Last Regret by Charmin Flowers. And you also had a YouTube put up with her song on it. So I'm going to be posting that all over Facebook as well. Remember, you can find us on Families Against Support Embezzlement, Unethical Standards Face Us, and Hidden Truth Revealed on Facebook. And you can also see us on Twitter as well. And until then, we'll see you next week again. And thank you. Thank you once again for coming on. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Night.
Good night.
I've been lying here thinking about the day we met, the day forever was set, and how much time we've got left. I find myself crying my eyes out. I gotta make you believe in me without
tomorrow's a brand new sunset. I'm gonna make